I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome back to the French Rugby Podcast with me, Tim Groves, ex-Scotland international and adopted Frenchman, Johnny Beattie. And we're going to be joined by one of, now a whole host of Englishmen plying his trade in the top 14, Perpignan's Ali Crossdale shortly. And there may well be more to come and more and more and more. We'll come to that later on, Johnny, with the rumours. But how are you doing? I've lost track of where you've been this weekend, but was it good?
It was good, mate. It was a really good mix as well. And it was the end of the cold weather. So currently it's 20 degrees. I've just had my lunch outside, which I know you'll love to hear as I see you spitting on me from across the Zoom call. It's nice. The weather's just changed. So all of a sudden the cold snap is gone. So to end the weekend, we had mates round for lunch on Saturday. Then we were out at friends again on the Saturday night. We had a raclette. Is raclette a thing?
Yeah.
It's almost like Swiss, French, melted cheese, all over potato, charcuterie, veg, and loads of red wine. That's optional with the raclette, but that was awesome. And then Sunday I was in Toulouse for their game with TNT. So mate, it was a nice mix, good weekend. And I think that's hopefully the end of the shitty cold weather in the winter. And we might be sneaking into spring.
Is that how it works in France? It's only mid-January and we're already in the spring, are we?
Mate, it's been, I don't know, overnight here the past 2 weeks it's been down. I don't know what it's been like back in the UK or everywhere else, but...
Shit.
Okay, so down here it's been cold. It hasn't been shit. It's been, you know, down sort of -4, -5, and then pretty chilly throughout the day. But then all of a sudden there's just sort of shift in temperature. It's meant to be 16 to 20 for the next week, 10 days. So hopefully that's the end of the shitty stuff and back to the nice old days of good weather.
And for those that don't know what a raclette is, it's basically just stuff with cheese on it, yeah?
Well, no, what happens is you boil a massive bowl of spuds. So you do your potatoes, then the raclette is like a hot plate that you sit in the middle of the table, and there's lots of little trays that you can put under this hot plate. So on top of the hot plate, you can do your meats, your bacon, your different stuff, your veg, if you want to do like peppers and stuff, peppers, rubbish. And then underneath is where you put your little trays in, where you've got your potatoes or your cheese or whatever you want to melt. And then you sort of douse all the food on your plate with the melted cheese, and you get smoked cheese, you get pepper cheese, you get normal cheese, you get all the cheeses, mate. And it makes for a pretty hefty and calorific evening. But it's fun, nice and social. Good way to have a meal.
Something for Owen Farrell to look forward to, Johnny. A raclette? Do you like what I did there?
Straight to his hips. That's all I'm going to say. He doesn't need it. It's going to go straight to those hips.
I'm sure he's going to enjoy life in France. It's been officially confirmed now. 2-year deal at Racing. Obviously, we spoke about it last week. It's been talked about. But what do you make of it now it's been confirmed? It's presumably good for all parties that it's out there.
Yeah, good for all parties. Maybe not for Saracens. That's the only party that...
Well, they've struggled while it's been rumoured, haven't they?
So... Yeah, well, since his head's obviously started to turn, he's such a big driver for their club that maybe things are starting to... Or the wheels are coming off internally, I don't know. But for him, for Racing, for next year and for his future, it's the right move for everyone. I think it's great, great club, not too far... Easy to get back home. He obviously got a good payday, gets away from the English media. Who needs English media when you've got nice non-media like us? So it's a good move for him. Looking forward to a change as well, because it'd be very easy to stay and be the marquee player and be a one-club man. But he wants a change. He wants to freshen things up. And the top 14 is a completely different kettle of fish. And I'm sure he will enjoy that challenge.
At a slightly different angle, some of the owners of various clubs throw things around at various points. I don't want to get into dodgy legal territory myself, But how can they afford him, Johnny? You got Khaleesi, Tuivasa, obviously maybe slightly lower, but guys like Harry Arundel, Roma Taufifanua, Demba Bamba coming in. I know there'll be outgoings as well, but are the whispers about this in France or not?
Creative accounting? I don't know, mate. You said it, like there's presidents that throw that type of chat back. Like Jackie Lorenzetti, president of Racing, is the first one to make those type of comments about other clubs. So look, they all have to declare it. If they go over, they get into trouble, they lose points, they get fined. I'm sure they will not do that. Nobody would ever do that over here. But yeah, you're right. Like, you look at the type of caliber of player that they're starting to accumulate. But then nobody really said anything during the Dan Carter era. Nobody really said anything down at Toulon when it was the backies both of Johnny Wilkinson. There's always been rock stars and teams with two layers deep of that type of player in the top 14. Now I'd say it's one layer deep. You've got your rock stars, it's your 15, and the rest is built around youth, which is the way it has to be. So boys like Sia Khaleesi, Owen Farrell that are coming over, big pay packets, huge salaries, but there's more to be done. It's not just about playing now. It's about how can they bring through the next generation of French kids that they're playing with and improve them too. Take Antoine Gilbert. Great, great example. He is just on the cusp of the French team, being called up for camp. But what about learning from Owen Farrell, playing alongside him, learning and training every day and how to drive a team around properly under the tutelage of Stuart Lancaster?
More rumours to come later on, as I said, to go with Owen Farrell, confirmed to Racing. But other news before we get into the Champions Cup. Horrible for Anthony Gillon, Johnny.
Oh, mate. And again, I was out of the game, and you could call it, like, as soon as it happened, he went to ground in the exact same way that he went to ground when he did his right side. So that's him. He's done his left ACL. He was back rapidly. The first one, he's only out for 6 months. He was straight back for the World Cup. And I don't know how he did it, but the fact that he has been back, he was phenomenal at the World Cup. He's been, he's just a freak, mate. So physical again at the weekend. But the fact that he's been through it, been through the ringer, and now walked off the pitch at the weekend and didn't look as uncomfortable as he did with his other side, but still just the sort of mental side of injury, dealing with those types of problems, the resilience he's going to have to develop, already has developed, but dig deep again to come back stronger for Toulouse and for France, who they need him, mate. Like, he's one of the biggest players for them at the minute. So incredibly sad for him. And yeah, mate, it'll be another operation, back to rehab. He'll be back down to Cerse, which is the big rehab clinic around the corner from me in Cap Breton, for his rehab. And we just wish him all the very best, because he's a lovely, lovely bloke.
Absolutely. And his teammate at Toulouse, Alexandre Rouma, is his replacement in the France squad. And then Manny Miafu picked up an injury at the weekend. So he's been ruled out, but only of the opener, we understand, against Ireland. So Paul Willemsen's back in the squad.
Yeah, so Alex Rouma is another one who, man, I thought he could have been in from the start in the squad. Like, the way he's been playing. Again, I never really understood why he was in and out of the side at Bordeaux when he was there. Like, great line-out leader, can play 7 or 8 in any team in the top 14 easily. Is now physical, has great hands, can offload, can bring people into the game around him. So he's a great call-up for Anthony Gillonche. And I really hope he gets a bit of game time, because he's a quality player. And Manny's just tweaked his lateral ligament on his knee, so he should only be out, 2 weeks max. So Paul Willems has come back into the squad and will be there for the opener down in Marseille against Ireland. And I don't know what the permutations will look like. Manny was a freak again at the weekend. I'm not sure if you watched that game, but so physical, running over people for fun. I think he weighed in with something like 12 offloads throughout the course of the 4 pool games. And he's just massive. So it's only a matter of time before he plays, but also delighted for Paul. Again, friend of the show, for him, in and out with the French squad, disappointing World Cup. I think he'd like to finish on his own terms as well. So if he gets another involvement, a wee bit more game time with the squad, and then can finish how he wants to finish, that's also really important. So yeah, disappointed for Manny and very sad for Anthony Gillonche.
Let's round up the Champions Cup then, because we'll obviously discuss the various ties in the round of 16 in a couple of months' time when we get there. But in terms of the fact that there are 5 matchups that we've already seen in the pool stages, is that just a coincidence, or is it an issue with the way the draw is done? Because if you think about the way that it's seeded, with the number one teams in the pool playing the number 4 teams in the pool, et cetera, there's a decent chance you're going to play a team you've already played, isn't there?
I think if you look around social media and the comments on what everyone thinks, everyone agrees, mate. Like, it's hard to follow in the first instance for the players, for the fans, for pundits. Like, I'm going to be asking questions and I'm working through. I'm sat next to somebody from EPCR during the game and I'm like, right, so let's just work through exactly what happens. Who can play who? And she was like, Oh, really? Like, you could just tell the look on her face, and everyone's the same. So we've ended up with a bunch of repeats of games that we've seen already in the pool stages. For fans and the idea of traveling and getting to see different grounds and visit different places, that's not what they want. For viewers watching from TV, it's repeats of the pool games. So it's not ideal. But yeah, it was always likely to happen. When you think of the old pool, like teams of four, you're playing as people from like top goes through, it's just so easy to follow. Whereas this, it's a little bit convoluted. It's hard to follow. And we've ended up with, you mentioned it, you tried to describe it, but one plays against the fourth, plays against the fifth player. Nobody really knows, but long the short is, we've got a bunch of games that we don't really want to see again. We'd like to see something different. That being said, the teams that are there, the coaches, they don't care. They're going to go through. They want to win. They were scrapping to get that home 16 game. Some of them have got it. Some of them haven't. And they don't care who they play against. They just want to win the competition. So we march on. But for the neutral, it's been a little bit difficult to follow. And there's probably some games that we've already seen. You're right.
We called it last week. We said there would be five French teams we thought that made it through. And so it unfolded. I was in Salford, Johnny. Horrible conditions. If you were against the wind, they were kicking the ball and it was ending up back over your own head. It was one of those days. But La Rochelle were impressive, weren't they?
They were. And they looked like two-time champions, which isn't something that we've said throughout the first half of the season too often. But mate, they rattled up. They were 28-0 after 45 minutes or something in difficult windy conditions. Again, I've played at that ground. It's like playing at the Kingspan back in the day when you've got wind swirling coming from one end of the pitch. And it is really difficult to control the ball, to negotiate, to keep ball in hand. But they were what we have come to expect, La Rochelle. They were big, physical, organized, difficult to stop. Greg, again, was monumental, new French captain, another 80 minutes, 20 tackles, 12 big carries, 3 turnovers. Antoine Hastoy, again, a boy that's been quiet, and he looked like it was a man with a point to prove after being left out of Fabien Galthié's squad, kicked very well in horrible conditions, ran in his try from 60, and looked like a bit of a man possessed. So, yeah, La Rochelle impressive, and Sale's not an easy place to go and win. Big, physical, hard to break down, really horrible injury for Johnny Hill. Not sure if you saw that one, dislocated knee, falling from a line out as well. That was grim. So thoughts to big Johnny as well. But yeah, La Rochelle looking big, efficient, and yeah, you're just hoping for more of the same from them.
Yeah, you mentioned Greg. Ron Agara did a great interview on ITV after the game in which he referenced Greg and the time away he's had and the conversations they'd all been part of to arrange that. He then brought in Winnie Antonio, Will Skelton into the conversation, basically admitted they don't want to train. So he doesn't make them a lot of the time, I don't think. And he just lets them go on game day. It's working. And they all look a little bit fresher after a sticky patch. And just on Greg, great stat for you, Johnny. You like a stat. He's lost 2 of his last 22 games for club and country over the past year. So that top 14 final, which was obviously devastating, and the World Cup quarterfinal to South Africa. Aside from that, when he plays,
he wins.
His team wins.
Because he's a freak show in the nicest possible sense. And it's the biggest compliment you can pay a rugby player. But the effect he has on La Rochelle, he was the one man missing, and the effect he has on France is absolutely huge. And that's why Fabien, we talked about it last week, but that's why Fabien Galthié, given his age profile, given the way he plays, given his importance to the side and the fact that he's the clear first choice to be their number 8, was an easy pick for captain. So yeah, mightily impressive.
The other French sides, Toulouse, obviously the top seed, 20 points out of 20. They will be favourites for the tournament as a result of being the number 1 seeds. You know, the bookies might have Leinster up there as well, La Rochelle, just given their history in the past couple of years in the tournament. But Toulouse will be there as a result of what they've done in the pool stages. But no Antoine Dupont for the knockout stages is going to have a huge impact, isn't it?
I'm not sure that's true.
Okay.
I was chatting to Jerome Kano at the weekend and Clément Poitrineau, and they were saying there's obviously a huge effect during the Six Nations and the competitions he's agreed to play in for the FFR, but Champions Cup is different. It's far enough down the track that I think they get him back. I'm not sure if there are big collisions with the knockout games, but they didn't seem to think so. I mean, that was how my mind was thinking, like, once he's gone, that's him and he's off. But they seemed to think that, A, that wasn't set. And also, if they made it through and they made round of 16, quarters, semis, and they were home, there was still, even if there was a sevens competition in the way, there was still room to negotiate and try and get him back and pull rank. So, yeah, I mean, they're right up there. Of course they are. The way they're playing, them, Leinster, La Rochelle, if they can win away from home in the next round, and Bordeaux, probably your four top dogs. But yeah, I don't think we'll write off Antoine Dupont yet. I think there's a strong chance that he might be back for different parts of the knockout stage of the Champion Cup.
Right, we'll get our guests on shortly and get our teeth into a load of juicy transfer rumours, as we mentioned later on as well. First, let's find out what your meter moment of the week is, Johnny.
Right, there was a pile this weekend. We had Bordeaux away to the Bulls. That was an absolute try-fest, six tries apiece. We had Rory Cockett. I'm not sure if you saw him lifting up the Stormers. Mate, he did. You remember Antoine Dupont did a Mack Hansen?
Yes.
Picked up Mack Hansen like a dump truck and pulled him backwards and he looked like an absolute pit bull. Rory Cockott did that to number eight at the weekend for the Stormers. He picked up the number eight of the Stormers and dragged him back effectively over the try line so he couldn't score. So another big moment by Rory Cockott. Six tries each for the Bulls and Bordeaux. What else did we have? Racing, they rocked in seven tries and we could have picked any one of those. But the meter moment of the week comes from Christian Waite. Did you see that one, Tim?
Yes, yeah. Very good. In a very appropriate week as well for Christian Waite to do it.
Exactly. Not just showing that Luis Riz-Ahmed is the only one that can head to NFL and come back and still rock it. But again, they were confident. They had Gilbert. Tristan Tedder was amazing as well at the weekend. Another friend of the show. But there were a few tries up anyway. Quick tap penalty taken from about their 40. Tristan Tedder finds Christian Waite on about the opposite 40-meter line. But again, it's just quick heads up, quick thinking rugby that we often see from French sides that traditionally other sides might kick to the corners. But Christian Waite gets released 40 meters of space. He manages to rally through about four side steps in about 4 seconds. He managed to leave Grady looking like he was a schoolboy clutching at I don't know who trying to tackle and bundle over. But seven tries for them. Christian Waite won them. They were absolutely exceptional. Back to winning ways and through to the next round. So that is this weekend's meter moment of the weekend. Christian Waite for Racing.
There we go. That was Johnny's meter moment of the week. And meter is the world's number one wireless meat thermometer, recently making over 20 million cooks better with their game-changing app and completely wireless Bluetooth meat probe. You can use it on a barbecue, in the oven, or in a pan. And you can get your hands on one at meter.com. Plus, you can now get 10% off any full price item. All you have to do is enter the code FrenchPod10 at checkout. That's FrenchPod10, and you'll get 10% off any full price item at meter.com.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Let's bring our guest on now then, and we can have a chat with one of quite a few Englishmen now applying his trade in the top 14 and doing it pretty well too. Perpignan's Ali Crossdale joins us. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you guys? All good?
We're well. Well, Johnny's better than me. He's a bit like you in the nice warmth of France, but I'm back home where you used to be. And it's miserable, Ali. Miserable.
You've got the storm. The storm's hit pretty hard, is it?
Absolutely. Everything's blown down. But yeah, anyway, less of that. We'll focus on the positives. We were just chatting about the Champions Cup, so we'll gloss over the Challenge Cup completely for you guys, because it's fair to say you didn't necessarily go full bore with that one.
No, we didn't. It was good for some boys to get everyone out, and it's a funny one. It was one of those where I'd love to have played, because obviously we played against Newcastle this weekend, but you know, it's just one of those. It's I think we had an interesting start to the season in the top 14, so you know, we had to kind of put a big focus on that, and I think that was the priority. So,
and it's going much better now over the festive period. 3 wins in a row, so that must have been a hell of a couple of weeks for you.
Yeah, like I said, the start of the season was, I think, I don't know, I don't want to use the World Cup as an excuse, but those 3 games were, it was just a weird, you know, mindset going in. I think we obviously had the fact that Frank came in and as a new coach and a load of new players. So I think, you know, those first 3 games, I mean, they were tough games. We had like Racing away, Clermont away, and Stade Français at home. But, you know, we just kind of lacked that cohesion, and we really, everything kind of misfired. Anything that could have gone wrong went wrong. But yeah, you know, over Christmas, I think, well, we obviously had a few good wins running up to that. And then over that Christmas period after that first Europe block, we just, things seem to gel a bit better, and, you know, 3 big wins, and, you know, hopefully continue like that, all being well.
So it's just a case of things maybe taking time to settle. Obviously, when new coaches come in, new players, these things take time. Now, as a group, do you feel a little bit more relaxed and in yourselves?
Yeah, I'm not a coach. I think, you know, the cohesion thing is an easy one to say as a player, that, you know, things just don't feel right, you know, when you're on the pitch. A load of skill errors, a load of issues with the set piece. You know, I'm not an expert on that either, but, you know, just things weren't kind of clicking. And I think whether that was just boys being desperate to impress a new coach coming in, you know, over trying, or just, you know, getting used to new positions, new compositions, and like, you know, playing with people you've not played with necessarily before. But I think, you know, I do think as well, you know, we had such a big pre-season, like we really went for it, like a big emphasis on the fitness, and I think we're seeing the gains from that now. But whether, you know, when it was still warm weather, and, you know, just off the back of a hard pre-season, you know, those first few games, it's a lot more relaxed environment now. I think obviously winning a few games helps, but yeah, I think the big one for us was getting that first win. And, you know, there's almost like on that Monday after that, it was like a complete shift. Just the boys kind of almost just breathing in and, you know, relaxing a bit more. So yeah, it was good.
We've spoken to a few players about that slightly strange start to the top 14 this season, and they've all sort of said, it's kind of obvious really, I suppose, but you had 2 pre-seasons, which doesn't sound very good, but I guess when you've got a new coach coming in, maybe it is a lot of fitness first time around, then you lose those 3 games, and then it was the second block of pre-season, almost more sort of tactical, technical.
Yeah, in a weird way, that second pre-season was almost a blessing for us, because we'd had such a, well, we ended that first block of games getting absolutely thumped by Racing away. And I think, you know, it's one of them where if we'd have had a game the weekend after, or, you know, continued like that, it was almost that bad that you're like, there's so many things we needed to fix. You know, having a game the weekend after would have just been a nightmare. So it gave us a chance to kind of, you know, really look back, and, you know, we had one-on-one meetings. I think we had 2 weeks off, and then we had one-on-one meetings straight away after that holiday. And, you know, I think it gave everyone a chance just to kind of go, right, okay, we've obviously started horrendously, but it's almost like we're starting completely afresh. And that, you said, you know, we did the fitness stuff in the first block, and obviously that didn't slacken off, but it was a lot more on, right, what do we really need to address? So it was almost a blessing in disguise for us, you know, having that that second pre-season almost.
It's enough to make anyone be sick. Two preseason, one's though, enough.
Mate, yeah. I'm saying it like it was a good thing, but mate, at the time it was
horrible to live through in one season through two preseasons. Absolutely gross. Mate, how did you find being part of the relegation battle last season? Because you've almost become a bit of a cult figure. I'm not sure if you know this from the outside, but you're loved by the Perpignan fans. Absolutely love you. Like the way you run, the way you go about your business, and they love the way you play, but there are difficult periods and relegation battles are not easily adjusted to mentally. Like if you haven't been there, they're horrible. So what did you find it like down in the sort of dogfight at the end of last season? What was that like to go through?
It was a complete like kind of wave of emotions, really. Like I think the issue, the big like thing for me was after Christmas, we had this, it was so funny, right? We had like a full crisis meeting after Christmas, like basically outlining the reality of the situation. But it started with, we all got a text, like woke up in the morning, like team meeting at 7 o'clock. And the last time I had one of those was when I was at Wasps, and it was when we got told we were redundant. So I remember walking in with Brad to the meeting, and we're both sat there like, what's going on here? Like,
not again.
Not again, please. And then after that, I think it was, we had a good game against Clermont, you know, lost it. And then it was kind of some tough games, but we managed to get the wins. And I think it was a really interesting experience for me because every single game is essentially a cup final, you know, obviously at the bottom of the league, but we were in the position last year where it was between us and Brive, really. You know, one week they'd be above us, the next week we'd be below, we'd be above them. And then there was a real shift when we beat them away. You know, that was like a real, right, okay, here we go, let's continue like that. And then you almost, it was a sense of, we got a bit of confidence, then we managed to lose to Montpellier at home. And again, it was just that wave of emotions of, you know, every week was class because you just like, this game's huge, especially the home games. You know, the home games, well, like we're talking about, our fans are just crazy. And, you know, having them behind you helps so much. But I know, annoyingly, I got injured, so I didn't even play the barrage match. But, you know, I went up on the team bus, mate, and I've genuinely never been so nervous, mate. I was literally, literally going into the talk. Like, because that first half, we were awful. Like, we had the worst start we could have had. Mate, I was just going to and from the toilet, like, because it's one of those where, you know, you're not involved, you can't do anything to change it. But, you know, I just watched it and it was awful. But I think, you know, winning that game was just almost, I didn't even play, but it was almost just such a highlight of my career that will stay with me forever. Just that whole kind of journey of staying up, because it means so much over here. You know, it's everything, isn't it? Like staying up in that top 14. So it was definitely a journey, but, you know, one that I wouldn't really want to go through again, hope.
Now you know what coaches feel like.
Mate, I know. I literally remember saying, I was sat next to someone on the bench and I was like, mate, I could not be a coach. Like,
boys,
you know, I don't know how they do it. I honestly don't know how they do it.
That bit's done. But what was the party like? Because when you assure top 14 survival, you know what it's like? Everyone's got a top 14 or a pro rata salary. Some people know that if they drop down a league, they're getting 50% of their pay packet.
Yeah.
Shit is getting a fan at home. You can't pay your bills. You can't pay the mortgage. What was that feeling like? What was that changing room like? And what was the party like? How long did it last after that game?
Mate, it was incredible. You know, I think someone's at Brad's, but our team manager forgot to buy beers. So the coach on the way back. So we've all finished and we're like, all right, class, we obviously got the beers that Grenoble provided. So we had a few of them. And then you're like, right, okay, let's all get on the bus. Everyone's on the bus. And we're like, right, where's the beers? Bear in mind, I think it was about 12:30, 1 in the morning on a Sunday. So you're like, in France, nothing's open. So then we managed to convince him to stay. Like, we stayed at the stadium, had a few beers there. And then we're like, right, we need to get back. So everyone's brought the little pitchers. So we all took 5 or 6 pitchers on the bus all the way back. And then, mate, I think it was a 6-hour coach carried on, and then it was straight away to the beach, you know, the beach bars in Cannae, which are just, yeah, it was class. And then a few boys went off to, no, we had a social at the beach bar that day on the Saturday, and then a few boys went off to Barcelona on the Sunday. So yeah, it was class.
And just quickly before we moved on, I think, Johnny, we had Tristan Tedder on at the end of last season, didn't we? Chatting about that access match and also about the crisis meeting that you referenced, Ali. And he was sort of saying that it was so odd because probably not as emotional and odd as the one you had at Wasps, obviously. But he said it was sort of almost being said that the coach was being sacked. Someone stood up and sort of said, yeah, no. Nice. And then that was it. And it's like you've experienced a lot in your young career being at Wasps and now being in France. And to have a meeting like that must be pretty strange for you, quite newly into your Perpignan career.
Mate, it was so bizarre. And, you know, I think, like I said, I think it was my birthday as well that day. I think the funny thing is, mate, I think I actually remember it as well. We had one of the blood tests in the morning, so no one had eaten. I was like, right, it's my birthday. My girlfriend made some brownies to take in. I was like, oh, everyone's going to really be happy. And then we get this message and I'm like, clapped, right? This is going to be such a bad day. And mate, yeah, it was for me and Brad as well. And I think, you know, it was just one of those where you're like, what's going to happen here? Like at that point, I didn't understand much French at all as well. So you just kind of sat through the whole meeting trying to read body language and you're like, don't actually know what is going on. Like I heard the word like money, heard that kind of thing. I'm like, is this actually happening again? But I think afterwards, you know, the thing I realized is it's pretty powerful in terms of, I think it was Matt Asibas, was the one that stood up and was like, no, we're sticking with the coaches. And, you know, completely the right choice. It was not the coaches or the game plan that was causing us to lose games. And I think, you know, I really respected that from him. And it was almost like a case of that whole experience brought us all together, and I think we went on to win the weekend after. And but you know, at the time, it's just, you know, you look back and it's laughable now, but at the time you're just like, what is going on here? Like it just different level, you know.
Tough meeting, but you had brownies to soften the blow at the end of it, so it was all right.
Mate, no one even ate them because everyone I think they sent us home after the meeting, so I'm just going back with these brownies like class.
Comfort eating your way home, that's what I'd have been up to.
Mate, it was.
And the man that you saved, Patrick Arletaz, is now the French attack coach. So what can we expect come the Six Nations, which is around the corner? What did you like about working with him, his points of difference, and what do you think is going to change under him with the French team?
I mean, it'd be a dream to be attack coach for that French team, to be honest. You know, they've got, you know, one of the most exciting backlines in the world, and then the forwards are, you know, as powerful as any team. I think, you know, Pat's great at, I think he's what I really liked about him, he's very good at allowing players to play their way. You know, he's not going to prescribe a system on people and you know, make them conform to something that they're not used to or what doesn't play to their strengths. And what I loved about him last year, you know, I think I don't know whether it's the same for every player, but I think there's times in the Premiership that you almost have to conform to a way of playing to suit the team you're playing for, which is obviously the way it works there, and it works in that way in a lot of teams. But it was my first experience of having a coach of going, you know, I almost got told off for, you know, as a winger, I was very used to sticking from Saris, and it didn't play much wing at Wasp, but when I was ever at Saris, it was always stay on the wing. You know, you come in if it's really on, but if not, you're out there, and if the ball's, you're the option wide always. So I remember one of the first experiences I had with Patrick was, you know, yelling at me because I haven't got off my wing. You know, he's like, you don't want to score. You don't want to score. Like, what are you doing? And I was like, okay, sweet. Like, so that freed me up again. I think, you know, for those French boys, like I said, it's a dream to coach them. I think what, you know, he's very creative and he likes trying things. You know, I think you saw some of the tries that we scored as a team last year. I think that was, again, just from a license to just play from anywhere. And, you know, and that's what the French team do now. But I think, you know, Patrick will just give them that freedom to, you know, express themselves properly. So, yeah, I think it'd be really exciting. I'm really intrigued to watch it during the Six Nations.
You mentioned the difference there between the top 14 and the Premiership in terms of culturally, maybe a bit more freedom to play. What are the other big differences? Because it's also 8 games longer than the Premiership season now. So, I mean, does it feel like a grind? I guess there's a few blocks of European games to break it up. I mean, you played throughout the Six Nations, which is a difference with the Premiership this season as well. But there are the big differences that you notice between the leagues.
Yeah, I think you said that grind. I think we've been training for about 4 months straight. So we've got our first week off in 2 weeks, which compared to, you know, speaking to some of my mates back home, it's like they're off every couple of weeks now at the moment. And obviously they've got these 10 days off coming up in the Six Nations. I think the main one for me would just be the games seem a lot more open in terms of as a back. And I think, you know, the physicality at the top level, I think is always pretty much the same. I think that's the thing. But I think over here, it's whether you're defending or attacking, you know, almost anything can happen. And I think as a player, for me, that's what I've really loved over here, just because that's the way I always, you know, used to love playing. Just growing up through the age groups of with England stuff, like, you know, John Fletcher and Waltz and those guys, that's what, you know, those training sessions were always about, and, you know, playing to your strengths and playing to space and, you know, not always being prescribed by a system. And that's not to say a system is wrong, because I do, you know, obviously respect that system's in place for a reason, but it's about those times where, you know, if there's space somewhere, take it, you know. And I think, you know, some of the tries you see every week in the top 14 are just, you know, you're like, how has that happened? You know, like, but I think that's the main thing I feel is a big difference. Obviously with the three teams going in the Premiership, it's changed their season completely. But I think the other thing is obviously, yeah, that grind is, you know, we're not even halfway through the season yet. And yeah, that's a massive one.
I mean, you've been there just over a year now, and obviously wasn't part of the plan at the time because of what happened at Wasps. So how do you look back and reflect at what happened then now? And how did that move to Perpignan come around?
You know, looking back, I think in a weird way, I think I'm very lucky, because I'm one of the ones that's landed on my feet in terms of, you know, I'm loving it here. You know, it's something, like you said, that I never thought I'd do. But, you know, being here now, you know, I couldn't be happier. It's literally, it's perfect for me at the moment. But then, you know, looking back, you know, and I've still got mates that, you know, still struggle to not get, and you know, good players that haven't got much. And it's just still sad thinking about it. And I think, you know, one thing will always be that those guys that were effective will always have that, you know, bond from what we went through, I think. And it's lovely catching up with boys over here or back at home, you know, just that, you know, that were at Wasps. For me, what happened? We got obviously at the meeting, and then I had about a month where I just kind of was still just coming back from injury. So I had to kind of rehab myself, and mate, I literally had a couple of meetings back home, but nothing really that was anything concrete. So, you know, I was kind of like weighing up what I was going to do and really thinking hard about life after rugby. I think that was one of the things that I almost got my head around, just because of the nature of it. You know, obviously we weren't the most unfortunate, because that ended up being London Irish, but we obviously went after Worcester. So, you know, a lot of the Worcester boys and the jobs that were out there, they'd taken. So it was a bit of an interesting one. And then for me, I really looked out. I think I owe Brad Shields a massive pat on the back, because I think Perpignan were looking for a back three player, and Brad just put my name forward. And then, mate, literally as soon as we started talking, it happened within, I think I moved within 4 or 5 days of actually having that first Zoom. So again, that was a bit of a shock, you know, trying to tell my friends, family, and obviously girlfriend at the time that was what I needed to do. But looking back now, it's all worked out perfectly. So,
and the players who didn't get gigs at the time, or maybe had to, as you say, drop down into the Championship, that's the main one. But you mentioned you were having conversations that weren't concrete at the time. I can't remember who it was we spoke to, but we spoke to a few players, and they were saying that obviously the offers that were being thrown about by other English clubs at the time were very low, because, I mean, obviously they didn't have a huge amount of money anyway, but they also knew that if you wanted to stay in England to fight for an international place, perhaps eventually, you had to kind of sign up to these offers. You didn't have a lot of choice. So is that what you kind of experienced at the time? And also, you mentioned then you were injured. Presumably the rug was completely pulled from under you. And did you have to fund that all yourself?
Yeah, mate. Definitely that. So the offers, I mean, it's one of them where the clubs had all the power. So they obviously, you know, there was one option for like injury cover that I was really like hopeful for. And then literally the scan came back and the guy wasn't injured for very long. So that didn't happen. And then, yeah, the offers were just, you know, it was one of them where you just kind of hoping that, it sounds awful to say, but you're almost hoping for it. Every week you're watching the Premier, like hoping someone gets injured, which is awful to say. But that was the kind of reality of the situation, that where there might be a bit of money, because obviously the clubs get the injury dispensation. The injury obviously didn't help me, because I couldn't. I mean, we played it quite well. My agent decided to not be completely honest with what I was injured. So it was a bit of a niggly adductor, which I was, you know, again, it was just such a stressful situation, because you're like, you know, if I need to go in and have to train tomorrow, am I going to be able to do it? You know, I think towards the kind of second, third week, I was absolutely fine and I was able to do it. But that first week of, you know, my agent's, you know, your phone was going off every now and then, you answer it straight away and you're like, oh, they want you to come in tomorrow. And you're just kind of fearful that if I go there and I'm injured again, covering someone else who's injured, it's like, you know, pointless. I was really lucky. We had a physio called Gaz, who's at Ulster now, who, mate, he was a legend, just literally for free of charge, was meeting up with a few of the boys. I think it was like twice a week. Obviously it was under wraps because there was no real insurance there. And, but you know, we were trying to give him some cash, but he didn't take it to this day. And, you know, I'm so thankful that he took the time to do that. But then there's other guys who were a bit more seriously injured, who I think the RPA did a really good job with. And with Restart Rugby, you know, funded some of their physios, whether it was privately or with physios at the club. But, you know, again, it was just a crazy situation because we were initially, for the first couple of weeks, we were still allowed to go into the WASH training ground. And you're going into that facility, which was just crazy. And you're like, this is all just gone. Like, it was just such a weird situation.
It's bonkers. On the theme of moves, Owen Farrell's move to Racing has been confirmed this morning. I'm sure you've seen it. You played with him at Saracens. So are you surprised, or do you think it's the perfect timing for him?
I think, you know, I'm really pleased for him and his family. I think it's one of them where, you know, we're all aware of the heat he's been getting, like, publicly and in the press and social media. Like, you know, I think it's just one of them where it takes its toll, doesn't it? You know, a player of that level and that like ability is just doesn't deserve that kind of criticism. But I know that's the modern age. But I think, you know, for him and his family, I think he's, you know, I think it's Saracen's 15 years. You know, I saw like a thing on Twitter earlier about all the medals he's won. I think what a time to go and try a new challenge. And I think, you know, that wrestling squad is, you know, clearly building something under Lancaster. He's worked with Lancaster before. So, you know, for him, I think I'm really pleased for him. And, you know, I think it'll be a really good move for him and the family. So
why do you think he gets so much heat? What is it about Faz that he manages to get this from the English media, from fans? Because what I see is a competitor, somebody that's really driven, probably isn't focused or worried about what people outwardly think about him, but the amount that he gets is ridiculous.
Mate, I think it genuinely is that. I think it literally is. I don't think I've ever met a more competitive, driven person. You know, I think, I don't know, I think whether that alienates people because they're not used to seeing players like that in rugby, or whether in any sport, whether that alienates someone. I think you almost hit the nail on the head, because he's so focused and like wanting to win throughout every game, and he doesn't think about what people are going to think of him, whether that is, you know, whether other people who aren't as driven and focused thinking, oh, I can't say this here because if the ref might picks it up, or, you know, I can't hit this ruck because there's a chance I'm going to hit someone high. But he doesn't think like that. He's so driven and focused on winning, you know, and that's why he's got so many medals, and that's why he is where he is. But I honestly don't know why, you know, having played with him and even as a kid watching him, he was someone that I've always respected and always looked up to and wanted to be the 10 for England. You know, when I was a kid, that was who, after Johnny and who, I was like, this is class and this is the best thing for England. So, you know, I don't know why he gets so much stick, but I think the main thing is that, you know, I think that Sarri's team this year, they still have the potential to go on and win the Premiership, or and then he's got, you know, an exciting couple of years ahead. And, you know, if he wants to come back for the World Cup, then, you know, that's great for England. But if not, then he's going to have a great time in Paris. And, you know, England's got future, you know, prospects at 10. So it's not, either way, it's a win-win, I think.
You're one of a lot of English players already playing in the top 14. But next season, you're looking at not only Farrell, Lewis Ludlam, Carl Sinclair. I know they haven't officially confirmed it, but that's the word is there.
The rumours, yeah.
Maybe sealed already, who knows? Courtney Laws has been looking around. Johnny Hill, rumoured to be going to Leon the Vunipolas, potentially. There are others, but Owen Farrell moving to France, is that going to be the straw that breaks the camel's back in terms of the RFU having to change things with international selection or not?
Mate, I honestly don't know. I think as a statement in terms of to change the criteria, I think it's the biggest one, isn't it? You know, he's England captain. I think it'll all be not dependent, but I think it'll be really interesting to see how the Six Nations goes. And I think, you know, how many boys do actually confirm whether they come over to France next year. You know, I thought a big one was Henry Rundle. You know, I thought, you know, he's, you know, the next big thing coming in England. Obviously decided to stay, but the RFU didn't budge. So, And then obviously Jack Willis again this week is, you know, extended at Toulouse. So, you know, I think there's so many players over here. And, you know, I think it's one of those where until it happens, you won't believe it's ever going to happen. So it'd be interesting to see what happens. But I think the main one that, you know, I'll be looking at is just how that Six Nations goes for England. You know, after a World Cup, it's a very new look squad. If it goes well for them, then, you know, great. And, you know, they might not think about changing the criteria, but, you know, if things don't quite go to plan and you think, oh, where are we missing players, and are people that, you know, have performed in the Six Nations actually leaving, then, you know, I think it does start to, you know, change things. But again, I'm not up at high up in the RFU. So it's just, yeah, it's a really interesting one. I'd love to be in their minds and figure out what's going on. But
okay, so you're not higher up in their RFU. Thank God. Nobody wants to be there. It'd be terrible jokes. But like when you mention those names, Arundel, Willis, Nowell already here, Sinclair, Johnny Hill potentially, the bulk of the team, or what would be seen as the first choice team, I know it might be coming to the end of a cycle, is going to be over here. Like if you can remove yourself, you're not at the top. You're just now an England fan. You're that kid that was enjoying watching Johnny Wilkinson, who was playing in France for parts, enjoying looking up to and playing with Owen Farrell. What would you like to see? Would you like to see English players be allowed to move? Or do you think there's a real need to protect the Premiership and their product? What would you do if you were in charge?
I think I look back to that Johnny one, and I remember begging my dad for Sky Sports when I was a kid to try and watch the top 14. You know, and I think watching a new league as a young kid who's developing as a, you know, trying to learn rugby properly, that was something that I loved doing, you know, and watching a different league and seeing different players. And, you know, I think as an England fan, why would you not want players playing in a league which is better, like it is at the moment the most secure and the most competitive? I think why would you not want that to develop it? You know, you look at how well it's worked for the South Africans, you know, it's working for them. But then at the same time, you know, with three teams gone in the Premiership, the Premiership's not functioning. So I get you need to obviously fix that situation there. And the crazy thing is for me is that obviously being on the other end of it, where with the GIF system, where I'm not really allowed to play every game because of the quota, and you know that has a big impact. So clubs in the top 14 and in Japan, there's a limit on how many foreign players can go to those places. So it's not as if the RFU are going to make a call and say, oh, we'll open up. We'll allow players the opportunity to play abroad, and everyone's going to have a mass exodus, because it just doesn't work like that, you know. I for me, if I was an England fan, that was what I'd want, is to be able to see players playing in different places, and for the players as well to just develop. You know, I'm Henry Rundle's killing it over here. You know, obviously he was doing very well at Irish, but you know, seeing him do that and for his development as a young player in that team, you know, you've got Faz there next year, you know, that's going to bring him on so much. And, you know, at the moment, he's going to have to go back and leave that situation to play for England in the World Cup. And yeah, for me, that's, yeah, it just doesn't seem right. But yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I could talk about all day.
And for yourself, mate, it's a similar situation. So you mentioned already at the start, Saracens, you stay on your wing, get to Perpignan, get off your wing, go and look for work, go and find ways of breaking tackles, run off the shoulders of 10s and 9s and get yourself into the game, which you do, and you break tackles and you're even more exciting to watch now, which is great. So is there a part of you as well that would like to take these parts and components that you've learned from being with different players, dealing with different coaches from different parts of the world? Would you've been involved in England in large training groups in the past, you've had some serious time, would you want to take that and move back to Premiership as well, or are you happy to stay here in France? Where'd your head be?
My dream still is always to play for England. You know, I think that's what, as a kid, that was always my dream, and that's, you know, still definitely the dream, and would be the highlight of my career, you know. And you know, if that meant moving to England again to have to do that, then, you know, definitely I'd want to do that. But, you know, for me at the moment, I feel like I'm older, but, you know, I'm only 26. You know, for me, I'm enjoying my rugby more than I have, you know, in years, you know. And obviously that a big part of that managed to stay fit and actually getting picked as well, which is a big one for being on the pitch. But I think, you know, for me, that's what that I'm holding on to at the moment, is that I'm absolutely loving it here. And for me now at the moment, it's just focusing on that. And, you know, in a year's time, in 2 years' time, if things change, and then who knows what happens. But, you know, the dream's always there, and, you know, you get not upset, but you just kind of like, oh, it's annoying that I can't be picked. But it's one of those where I just hold on to, you know, looking at each week and going, God, we're playing against La Rochelle this week. And, you know, in my head, it's like, we're playing at an international level, playing against those teams. So I think all I can focus on is, you know, trying to do well and play against, when I play against those teams and each week, and, you know, keep developing myself and see what happens, I think is one of those.
Absolutely. And hopefully they do change the rules, because otherwise, when, you know, it's not just you, there's a load of players, but when your contract comes up for renewal, it then becomes an epic decision, doesn't it? Because you've almost got to look for a move back if you want to pursue that international line, versus I'm having a great time, it's brilliant living in France, different culture, different way of playing, broaden your own horizons personally and on the rugby field. It's a tough one. So we'll leave that, we'll park that until it comes up for you again. But Johnny mentioned it there, you were involved with England, you trained with England a few years ago. It's not that long ago. So how was that as an experience? Because I think you were in and around the squad for the 2021 Six Nations when there was sort of like a shadow Six Nations squad.
Yeah.
And Eddie Jones was in charge then. We always ask everyone if they've got an Eddie Jones story. Did you have much interaction with him?
Mate, I did, yeah. No, for me, it was just bizarre because I think it was after COVID. So it was that really weird block straight after the first lockdown. So I think we played one team and then we played Worcester. And I remember I had a good game. And then out of nowhere, my agent called me like, oh, Eddie's just got hold of me. You're like, you're going to be involved for the Barbars. And I was like, sorry, like, I literally thought he was having a joke. So I was like, okay, whatever, like, that's not going to happen. You just like, oh, typical agent chat, like, just. But yeah, then lo and behold, I get this phone call at, like, God only knows what time in the morning. Thankfully, I had my phone on loud, and I'm like, answer it. And he's like, am I? And I'm like, oh, God, like, straight away knew who it was. And mate, camp was class, but I think I always had that, like, I don't know, like, because I hadn't played loads and kind of went in as off the back of, in my head, one good Prem game. Like, that was what I kind of thought had happened. And I almost had that kind of doubt the whole time I was there. Like, am I actually good enough to be here? And, you know, that was for me. Like, that's a shame, annoyingly, that was kind of my mindset when I was there. And, you know, I loved it. I loved camp. And unfortunately, that Barbars game got canned because those boys went out on the piss, which was annoying. That got canned, and then, mate, we had Italy. The end of that Six Nations from February was the weekend after, and Eddie, you know, saying, "Oh, like, you're going to be here next week to train, and, you know, we'll see what happens." And, you know, I was so excited about that, but because that game got cancelled, we had a session on the Saturday. And Eddie was like, right, it's a game. We're just going to go 15 on 15. And then I've got injured in that bloody session and then got sent home. So I was like, perfect. That was the end of that experience. But yeah, mate, Eddie, yeah, I personally thought he was class and intense. Like, you know, you're just constantly on edge. I remember the first, my only Eddie story was, and it hasn't stuck with me, I'm ashamed to say, I've got a fridge full of it, was ketchup for me. Like, first breakfast, mate, I've got it, and like, it was like dry sausages, dry bacon, dry eggs, like, and I'm like, okay, sweet, got, just literally reached, cracked open some ketchup, like, piled it on, like, loved it. I'm whacking it in, I just feel this like presence just here breathing in my ear, like, what are you doing? And I was like, oh, just eating breakfast. Like, it was my first day there. And he's like, does Johnny May have ketchup? I'm like, no. Go over to the bin, scrape the ketchup off. And then, mate, after that, every meal, like, even if we're having soup, if we're having, I don't know, pasta, anything, every time here. And he's like this, looking at my plate. I'm like, I don't have any ketchup. Like, well, that was it for me.
What a strange fish. He's a strange fish. And then you compare that to like my time at Cast, where the pre-match game meal was entrecote, goat's cheese pizza, chips, bottles of Coke, ice cream. Mate, like,
it's different over here, isn't it?
It's good fun. I like it over here. That's why I haven't left.
Different cultures. I love that, though. Does Johnny May have ketchup? What a question. Like, I mean,
I know. Mate, I was like, no, he doesn't.
I bet Johnny May has been through, he's a strange fish as well. He's been through a pile of ketchup in his time, that lad. 100%.
He probably just stores it in his room, mate, and then, you know, just goes back and just squirts him in his mouth. That was it for me. Put me off for a while. And I was like,
what injury did you get in 15 on 15?
I did my calf, like, just literally I think I was just sprinting and it just went completely. So I was out for about 8 weeks with that. I think it was the season we, Sarries were in the champ. So I told Sarries I was leaving to Wasps. And then, you know, I think I only ended up playing one game. So, because the champ season that year was like something like 8 games. So I played one game against Amptill. And then, yeah, then that was it. And then moved to Wasps. And yeah, I think I got one text after that from him after like a good game, but didn't hear from him again.
Have you ditched the ketchup?
Exactly. Ketchup. Post-match meal, have some ketchup. You're right.
I think I told him I haven't. That's why I never got in touch. That's the reason, mate.
Did you say, Eddie, you should see the meals, the post-match meals in the championship? It's just sausage and ketchup. That's all you get.
Sausage and ketchup, a few chips. That's all you get. Yeah.
Speaking of international rugby, but bringing it back to the present, one of your teammates at the moment, Pasolo Turelangi, he is only 19, but are you surprised he isn't in the front squad at the moment? Because a lot of people thought he was going to be.
I am. Yeah, I am, definitely. I think, you know, I haven't played with someone in a long time where they have, especially at his age, it's crazy like to think how young he is, where just to have such an impact on the game. Every single time he touches the ball, something happens, whether it's, you know, making yards or, you know, his hands are really good. Like there's no real, he's smashing people in defence. Like there's just, I look at him and I'm like, at 19 years old, like even as development, I would have had him in and around that squad, you know, whether he's, I personally think he is ready for that step up, but obviously the French team is loaded. But I would have definitely had him in that squad just for that experience and that exposure. You know, it's great for us that he isn't, like, in the nicest way possible from a selfish point of view. But, you know, again, I think it's one of them where he's 19 years old, like, it's going to come at some point. But yeah, I just think, you know, he doesn't seem too disheartened by it. You know, I think he's pretty grounded. So it's one of those things that I think we're all hoping for him at some point it comes around, whether it's on the summer tour this year for him, hopefully, or even next year. But I think, yeah, I'd have personally had him in. I think he's a machine, so...
He's a phenomenon, mate. And you're right, there's two tests, whereas it's in Argentina this year, their summer tour. So he's going to get picked up at some point. And like you said, selfishly for you boys, you'd be delighted he's not going to Six Nations. You need him there, yeah. Especially with these doubles that are going to happen. There's a couple of games where it's still, and you don't lose too many players at all. So the fact that he's still there is great news for you. What is he like in general? Again, I haven't had much contact with him at all, but as a bloke in training, a personality, what's he like? Only 19, like you said, he's still young. But what's he like as a lad?
Mate, such a nice guy. Like, just really grounded, down to earth. In training, you get a different side to him. So I think, you know, last year we had like a real... There was a big shift just 1 week, like genuinely. I think I wasn't obviously joined kind of midway through the season. And saw him, I was like, bloody hell, like, who's this guy? Like, obviously know the name, but like... In training, you didn't really see him. You didn't notice, for someone that size, you didn't see him. And I spoke to a few boys who were like, yeah, like, you know, he's just not, you know, I don't know whether it's just nerves, like that being in the first team setup at 18 or whatever. Like, and then we had this 1 week, and I think it was Patrick who just like flew into him a bit at the start of the session. And no, mate, no word of a lie, like no one was safe that week. And then after that, he played that weekend. Incredible. And then it's just kind of gone from there. You know, I think he almost either needed that, I don't know, like a direct, mate, just take off, like, you know, just hit someone or just run over someone. He almost was just kind of so shy and, you know, almost doubting himself that he needed that, again, that bit of a kick. And I think, yeah, since then, mate, he's just, yeah, taken off. And, you know, you still get that sometimes in training where, you know, if we have a live session, you're like, please be on my team. Like, please. But yeah, mate, it's just, yeah, I think, again, like I said, he's not taken, I've not seen any difference since the French squad came out in him. And, you know, I think that says a lot about someone. Like, he could easily be sulking and, you know, being a bit, you know, lethargic around training. Yeah, but he's not at all, you know. So, yeah, you know, I think the future for him is just going to be massive. Like, he's, you know, he's going to have a hell of a career. So.
And there's a chance there might be another one. I say another one of the family. Obviously, you've got Henry around the club, who's a legend. Yeah. Manu's looking as well. Like, has Manu been down to have a look around the campus yet?
Not seen him. You know, like, yeah, I think all I've seen and heard is the same rumors everyone else is hearing. So I think, you know, obviously we're all crossing our fingers and hoping. But you know, we'll just have to see. You know, I think that would be incredible for us. I think it would be a big statement from Frank and from the club if we managed to get hold of him, of where our aspirations are. I think, you know, Frank's been class in terms of there's been just because of how the last kind of, you know, few seasons have gone for Perpignan, I think there's kind of almost been an acceptance from the general public and that, you know, we are just going to scrap it out every year. And I think Frank's come in and really changed that mentality to, right, let's change that around. You know, I think there's been a big focus on those away games, you know, like everyone talks about it, those away games where that mentality of, you know, it's away game, let's, you know, rest boys, or we're not going to win that one because it's to lose away, or, you know, but Frank's had a real shift this year of, you know, we're going to every away game and we're going to try and win, you know. I think that cast game in that Christmas block when we managed to get a win just summed that up, you know, that, and I think, again, we've taken a lot of confidence from that. So, you know, I think it would be a big statement if we do manage to get Manu, but, you know, I'm sure he's probably got mega offers from elsewhere. So just to wait and see and see if he fancies playing with his cousin. So
I was going to say that's a draw. And in terms of a transfer policy for Frank, as many Tuolangis as you can get is quite a good one.
Yeah, no, 100%.
You mentioned the away form and the away mentality, which Frank is trying to shift. And it's always a thing. We see it with other French sides as well. It's something that you have to work on. You had a big result over Christmas. This weekend, huge game at Lyon.
Yeah, huge game. Yeah, you know, there's no two words about it. So we're, I think, 1 point above them. So, you know, and if we win it, then it puts a gap between us. And obviously the other team is chasing. You've got Oyonnax and Montpellier. So, you know, it's a huge game. But like I said, I think the benefit we have is, I think, of a lot of the squad. And like I said earlier, is, you know, that last season, you know, every game was this, you know, cup final. And that was when we were chasing, trying to get the results and chasing those teams. Whereas this season, it's nice that at the moment we are above them, but we have that pressure, obviously. But, you know, I think for us, we benefit from, it's not panic stations, you know, it's just a case of, it's the same as last year. Like, we just need to just do the job and go there and not panic, you know. And I think that was, you know, when we played Montpellier, when was it, like November time? I think when we beat them, you definitely got a sense from them of how nervous they were. Like, I was messaging Stukey, who was there at the time during that week, and he's like, mate, it's, you know, it's just stress, like, it's carnage. It's stressful as hell here. Like, everyone's kind of all over the place. And, you know, you obviously saw that with, you know, they sacked the coach straight after that game. So, you know, where it's annoying, but we're used to being in these positions. So, you know, it's a huge game. And the weekend after is, you know, a huge game. We've got Racing at home. But, you know, it's two games and then we've got a week off. And for us, it's, you know, it's the same as last year. We just have to go and get a performance and hopefully get a win. So we'll see how we go.
And looking at that game, mate, you've obviously done your analysis. We're halfway through the week. It's Tuesday. You've just had your double session.
Yeah.
What have you made of Lyon? They've been a bit of a mixed bag this year so far, but what are the threats? What are you going to have to do well to beat Lyon and try and climb back up this top 14 table?
I mean, I think Semi Rodrada will be back this week. So it's obviously nullifying that threat because he's, you know, incredible. So that'll be a big one. You know, we've massive focus on our set piece. You know, there's been quite a few more tries scored against them this season. And then for the back, you know, a big one for them is, you know, their kicking game. So they, you know, kick off 10 quite a lot and dealing with those, you know, like high bombs. But, you know, again, they've had a mixed bag. We've had a mixed bag. So it's one of those that'll be an interesting matchup. And, you know, it's just about starting well. Like, we're one of those teams that, you know, we need to start well, get that confidence. And then that other block for us is just after half time. It's just not switching off. You know, we've had a few cases this year where that's been an issue. But yeah, you know, I think if this league is just, you know, you look at each week, I was saying it earlier, but, you know, you look at each weekend and who you're lining up against and what threats teams have. And you're like, you know, their whole team's class, you know, and it's just like, it's such a nice experience to be able to do that every week. So excited for it.
Absolutely. Semi is a big threat. I was doing Saracens Lyon at the weekend. You won't take your eyes off David Ninishvili as well. I mean,
oh, mate. Yeah, he's on
intercepts
fire
at the all over the place. He was over the ball, winding players up. He was everywhere. So there's another
on
one.
Fire.
Good luck the weekend, the rest of the season. Hopefully the RFU will change their selection policy as well. And we'll see you in a white shirt at some point soon.
Thank you very much, guys. Thank you.
Cheers, Ali.
Cheers, guys.
We mentioned it there. He is one of a number of Englishmen now joining the top 14. He's one whose move happened very much by surprise, quickly, but he's loving life and good views on what the RFU maybe should or shouldn't do.
It wasn't planned, obviously, but he's adapted. Like I mentioned at the start, I think he sort of thought it was a joke. He's become a bit of a cult figure, but he's loved by the fans down there. He's playing really well. And I guess that taps into the different bits he was talking about in adapting the way he's playing, working with different coaches, coming onto the ball more. Like he comes onto ball a lot. He's breaking tackles. He's rapid. And he's fun to watch. Again, like I was going through thinking about, you know, the process of maybe having both two laggies there, like trying to get the same colored bibs. You want to avoid both of them in training. Like he's having a great time. And it's a really diverse squad as well with good people. So I'm glad that he's settled. I'm glad that he's enjoying it. And yeah, it would be great to see him eventually in the white of England. But for now, it's great to see him in Catalan colors doing so well down for Perpignan.
And he spoke very diplomatically, but I was going to put it quite bluntly. He was basically stood on the wing chasing box kicks at Saracens.
That's what he said. I was on the wing at Saris and they just want you to stay there. Whereas I come over here and I get to play rugby. And you're like, it sounds like a no-brainer. Just stay here. Sunshine on your back. Down at Cannae at the weekend at the beach clubs. I mean, what's not to like? So no, great to have him on.
Shall we have a look at who else might be hitting the beach clubs in France soon?
Oof, there's a few, mate.
There are, aren't there?
There's a few. A few of these boys I caught up with at the weekend as well. So I will neither confirm nor deny, but we can list them. Yuan Tanga, who actually was playing centre at the weekend against Sale.
Did a decent job.
He's probably lacking the size to be a top level number eight. I reckon his best bet is going to be if he moves to six, which is where your sort of open side flanker in France is your six. You're sort of close to the ground, competing for ball. He's not quite big enough to be a seven or an eight in France, I don't think, but he's been linked with Stade Francais, as has Henry Slade, who's been knocking over match winners for fun recently. Henry Slade, Exeter to Stade Francais. Johnny Hill, who did a really bad injury to his knee at the weekend, to Lyon. Joey Carberry, we've mentioned him before, looking stronger to Bordeaux, as is Johnny Gray. Rohan Janssen van Rensburg to Bordeaux as well. Andre Esterhazen to Toulon. They're looking for a big 12. Melvin Jaminet is getting panned there as well. I'm not sure if you've seen that stuff. Just local press thinking that he should be better, would be better. The club's giving you massive confidence, big salary. And then he was utterly crap against Munster. And they're like, what's happening? Actually, yesterday there were protests outside the training ground at Toulon as well.
Wow.
Fans not happy. Other ones, we spoke about it a little bit there. Manu Tuilagi, he's been linked with both Montpellier and Perpignan. Courtney Laws, who was Aix-en-Provence Brive, now linked to Montpellier as well. Joel Kapoku, who was pretty good for Lyon against Saris at the weekend. That was the Joel Kapoku derby. He's been linked to Pau. And Kieran Brooks looking to stay in France. He's also looking to move potentially to Perpignan to replace Jolly, who's looking a little bit older these days. So the Mercato, as it's called over here, never ending, the transfers, still loads going on. And look, these are all top end players as well. This is the difference. It's the cream of the crop that'll make a difference. So yeah, hopefully there'll be some big ones that get announced in the next couple of weeks.
The Mercato, is that the merry-go-round?
Must be, mate.
Transfer merry-go-round.
Must be.
There'll be more to come in the future weeks, but that was a lot this week. Well done for getting through all of them.
It was a decent list.
Thanks, Johnny. A big thanks to Ali Crossdale for joining us. And thanks to all you guys for listening. Make sure you hit subscribe, leave us a nice review if you can, check us out on Rugby Pass and on YouTube, and we'll be back with another episode next week. Au revoir, Johnny.
See you then, mate. Cheers.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.